Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, which we'll get to in a moment. But, Jim, we've always said that we have the smartest and quickest-thinking listeners out there. I got a message following yesterday's podcast that not only are we providing cover for the lizard people, but that the lizard people are actually the ones really rigging the elections.
You know, that does make sense. You know why? Because the rigging appears very competent. And if there's anything we've learned in our time on this earth, on this planet, Greg, speaking as a fellow lizard person, it's that human beings tend to be incompetent, which is why the lizard people usually win.
All right. On to the good martini now. And we're having more fun at the expense of liberals. This is a double-barreled good martini. George Lopez, longtime liberal, not quiet about it. And this time he is not only going after Donald Trump, but talking about where he stands on the Democratic side of the ledger in the 2016 campaign. He was appearing on the Big Boy radio show, and after denouncing Trump, he went into where he stands on the Democratic side. Here's what he said.
Have you endorsed anyone? Or
I endorsed Bernie Sanders. But really just to – I mean, that's cool. I can't pay any more taxes. I mean, it's ridiculous. But so we'll figure it out. But I really just did it just to get the awareness out and have people vote. You know, vote the Latino people would come and register people at my show.
So George Lopez is totally fine with Bernie Sanders, but he just doesn't want to pay the higher taxes. I'm sure that'll turn out well. Jim, you also have in the morning jolt today a point from Paul Krugman on the left, who should be loving Bernie Sanders, but doesn't believe Bernie's big ideas would actually happen. The easy slogan here is break up the banks. It's obvious why this slogan is appealing from a political point of view. Wall Street supplies an excellent cast of villains, but were big banks really at the heart of the financial crisis? And would breaking them up protect us from future crises? He also calls Hillary Clinton unfit for office, Jim. So we finally get some popcorn on the other side.
We do, Greg. And one of the things that kind of is fascinating about this is the second time somebody who you think would be at least philosophically or spiritually attuned to the attitude of Bernie Sanders and in broad agreement with him, basically has called him out for saying that, no, he actually doesn't know what he's talking about at all. Krugman really kind of rips into him today. He's basically saying that on his what's supposed to be his signature issue, financial reform and breaking up the big banks, Bernie Sanders doesn't really know what he does, what he wants to do other than break them up, make them smaller. He doesn't have much of a sense of the mechanism for this, and he just kind of fumes about this. And then a couple of days ago, it was the Washington Post editorial board that tore into him for saying, look, he contended that the Panama Papers scandal resulted from the 2011 U.S.-Panama trade deal. As I had noted, Greg, you assume this means that people started setting up their accounts in Panama back in the 1980s because they could foresee that it was going to come along in 2011. The dirty little secret is that Bernie Sanders really doesn't know that much about these issues or that he's, you know, his knowledge doesn't really get into much detail about these things. And so other than having an attitude of what he wants to do, he doesn't really know this the specifics of it. And I think that there are some liberals who may have at one point fallen in love with the Sanders mystique who are suddenly realizing there's less substance there than they originally thought.
How about George Lopez? You think he's going to get away with electing Bernie, which probably won't happen, obviously, but also not paying higher taxes?
The fascinating is how he says this in like two sentences of each other. You know, yeah, I endorse Bernie Sanders, but man, my taxes are ridiculous. Suggesting he knows nothing about Bernie Sanders. I mean, there's a $15 trillion in tax hikes proposed by Bernie Sanders. Does George Lopez think these are optional? Right? Like, you know, well, I remember I endorsed you early, Bernie, so I don't have to pay them, right? It's cool. We're square. Yeah. I don't think it really works that way. As I wrote in the Morning Jolt today, Greg, that look, we talk, you know, the argument from some folks on the left is that blue collar conservatives vote against their economic interests. Here is George Lopez openly saying that his viewpoint is that he's overtaxed and he's voting for the guy who's promising to raise taxes on him a whole lot. And he doesn't seem to see any contradiction there. So, you know, look, no, maybe we shouldn't be turning to sitcom stars or comedians for political guidance. But the fact that he says that within those two sentences and doesn't grasp any contradiction there is just a fascinating illumination of how their minds work.
Which is a worse idea, going to a sitcom star for political analysis or Paul Krugman for economic analysis?
Let them swap. I'd watch a Paul Krugman sitcom. I mean, Paul Krugman just seems like a Paul Giamatti character waiting to happen. fuming and harumphing and, you know, every single day doing battle with a straw man. So.
Oh, wow. Okay, on to the bad martini today. And, Jim, you remember last month, of course, when Donald Trump, after doing some math and realizing that after not winning Ohio and Ted Cruz had won some other states that he was hoping to at least get more delegates in, the 1237 was looking a little more iffy. And so I believe it was on CNN where Trump said that, you know, if I get close, if I get to like 1100, I think I should get the nomination or else people are going to be really upset and there might even be riots. Well, apparently, at least for one member of the Republican National Committee, Donald Trump is apparently a Jedi, because that's exactly what one of them is saying now. Randy Evans, a Republican National Committee member, today on MSNBC's Morning Joe.
What I do expect to happen is this, is that if Donald Trump exceeds 1,100 votes, he will become the nominee, even though he may not have 1,237. If he gets less than 1,000 delegates, then I think we're looking at a contested convention that could go on for many, many days. And then in the middle, there's that gray area between 1,000 and 1,100. And that's where the unbound delegates or the delegates that have been released by other candidates come into play to see if there are enough of those to get either Cruz or Trump over the finish line.
So, Jim, is this just a matter of if Trump gets over 1,100, he'll probably be able to wrangle enough unbound delegates? Or is this just an RNC that's getting increasingly squirmy about what would happen if Trump gets that close but doesn't get the nomination?
You know, I think there had one point there had kind of been this relative broad agreement that, well, look, let's suppose it comes out and then Trump gets 1,236, right? You know, it's not going to be that hard to find one delegate who's willing to say, all right, I'll jump in. And the question is, the further you get from 1,237, the less the, oh, come on, give it to him, he's so close, case gets harder and harder to make. And now apparently, at least according to this one RNC member, 1,100 is close enough. But 1,000 is totally unthinkable. 1,000 at that point, it's you know, it's kind of silly and ridiculous. Everybody's going to have their own line in their own mind. But it's strange, this casualness of which, 1,237 doesn't have to be 1,237. I think he's probably going to have some delegates who disagree with him on that. And it's a little bit strange to see some delegates being so open to kind of, you know, moving the goalposts, and not by a little bit, by quite a lot. In an effort to say, hey, you know, let's give this guy the nomination. He looks close enough. All of this, by the way, would be a little bit different if Trump was not, you know, losing terribly against Hillary and all the head-to-head polling. And if, as I wrote yesterday, Cruz wasn't doing significantly better.
After all that fun, let's move on to the crazy martini now. And Keith Olbermann is back, if only briefly. Let's at least hope it's brief. As you point out in the lead story in The Jolt today, Jim, Keith Olbermann is now embarrassed to live at Trump Palace in New York City. He's decided that here, just in the past couple of weeks, it's just untenable for him to stay in a Trump property because of the degree to which the very name Trump has degraded the public discourse and the nation itself. And he bought this place back in 2007, as you point out, when Trump was questioning the Obama birth certificate or Obama's college records or a connection between vaccinations and autism and on to all the controversies of this campaign. Apparently none of that was enough, but for some reason, something last month triggered it for Keith Olbermann, and he just can't take it anymore.
Yeah, I have an exciting update to this story, Greg.
Oh,
I wrote about this in the Morning Jolt. I put this up in the corner this morning. Just a few moments ago, before we started taping, Greg, Keith Olbermann himself, formerly of SportsCenter, formerly of MSNBC, formerly of Current, the guy who stormed off the set every single one of those places and keeps getting in trouble, responded, quote, 2011 to 2013, you mean back when you cretins weren't running Trump for the presidency? That's it. That's the entire response he gave. So I guess the idea, Greg, is that, well, as long as Trump isn't running for president, Olbermann doesn't have that much of a problem with him. As I pointed out, that was the time period that Trump was offering money for Trump's real birth certificate. He said that Obama wasn't born in this country. There's something on his birth certificate he doesn't want to show. Like, I would think that would bother Keith Olbermann, right? Keith Olbermann, the outspoken progressive, they used to declare everybody who disagreed with him is the worst person in the world. You think that would bug him. You would think that it's not like that Donald Trump became controversial overnight. Donald Trump has been like this for a really long time. And yet for some reason, only in March did this become intolerable for Keith Olbermann. And he's going to have to, he can't stand to live in this, in Trump Palace anymore. I mean, the bizarre thing is, I mean, Greg, could you imagine being Keith Olbermann, this like outspoken progressive, and it, you know, at some point in casual conversation, people, oh, where do you live? Oh, I live in Trump Palace. You know, it was last summer that Trump had said Mexico is sending rapists here, right? And every good-hearted, good, you know, pure-hearted progressive liberal said that was racism, that was xenophobia, it was demonizing illegal immigrants, it was terrible. But that apparently wasn't enough to get Olbermann to move out. Since then, Olbermann has now written like three columns about this. He wrote one about what a terrible landlord Trump was and how things were never fixed and took forever and he hired the wrong contractors and all that stuff. Again, if it was so terrible, why did Keith Olbermann live there? And then today he goes on this long description of how obnoxious Trump was after the great Yankee shortstop Derek Jeter sold his penthouse and moved out of one of the Trump properties. Like a week later, Jeter breaks his ankle and then Donald Trump sends out these obnoxious tweets kind of gloating about it. Well, again, if it's such a horrible person, if he's the living, breathing embodiment of everything you can't stand, Keith, why are you living there? I think you'd have the opportunity to live elsewhere. He paid about $4.2 million for this back in 2007. He's selling it for less now. He's going to lose some money on the deal. That's unfortunate for him. But like, it's just very, very bizarre that only very recently has living at a Trump address has become intolerable for Keith Olbermann, meaning that he kind of had to avert his eyes for this. And now, of course, he's announcing it to the world. And I guess he wants everyone to pat him on the back for saying, good for you, Keith Olbermann. You're standing up to Trump after living in his place since 2007. So we're just going to kind of hand wave that away.
At least, folks, you can feel good about the fact, I don't know what your house cost, but paying $4.2 million for 1,750 square feet does not seem like the greatest deal, even if everything's plated in gold, which at Trump Palace it might be, but still.
Yeah, you know what? New York values there. Greg, New York values.
New York property values. Something I don't think a lot of people want to deal with either. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.